There you go. See, you hear it?
Beep, beep, beep. I think it's your connection. It's your port.
Don't say that, because that's the worst thing it could be.
Your ship's going into the wrong port.
Don't say that.
You'll need a technician.
It could be a week
and he'll have it battery. Ready. He'll have it ready by Monday.
Could be a week. Yeah, $500 later. Fuck off. Hello and welcome to another episode of Sounds from the 70s with Gary and Rob, sometimes known as the rightful successor to the Lee J. Cobb legacy. And we are coming, it's a beeping away. All of a sudden the show starts and my battery is just a beeping away.
That's power coming in and going out.
Don't worry about it. You know what? We're going to make the beep part of our show, and people are going to say, I didn't hear the beep this week. Don't fuck around, Rob.
I'm going to pull that over there like that.
There we go. Oh, yeah, that's good. Now we got no power. Okay, so.
You got power.
And we are coming. I messed up the whole thing. We should, as a professional podcast,
start again,
but we won't.
We won't.
We are coming to you from our, we need a heater in our new studio place. That's what we call it. We should call it, we need a heater studio.
Yeah.
That's what we should call it. We're somewhere not in the metropolis area of the city, but not in the country. Again, riddle me this. It's kind of a riddle, I guess. Where are we? If we're not in the metropolis of the city and we're not in the country, where are we?
We must have been cast out. I would say hell.
Hell.
Well, it's a little not fiery to be hell.
You see, you wiggled my wiggle. There we go. Now I got it. Nope. There, now we gone. Got the thing going again.
You flip it back over.
We're having trouble getting battery to power to my laptop is what's happening, people. And it's a problem I know that many have to deal with in life. Uh-huh. But you don't have a fucking podcast, do you, people?
No.
Do you?
Some do.
Maybe.
Well, we should take a survey.
Today is the third part. I mean, we already lost everybody. I mean, it only takes minutes to lose people with our very angry and sometimes irrelevant chatter.
Yeah, but I want to make it perfectly clear. Audience, it's not you we're angry with.
Oh, I am. Anyways, today is the third in our four-part series on debut albums released 50 years ago in 1973. And today we feature the debut album, or as I call it, the debut album from the popular 70s band 10cc, or as Rob always calls them, 10 I just thought of that. That's improvised. That's kids. That's brilliant improvisation.
You can't make that stuff up.
No, you can't, and you shouldn't. It's a self-titled debut album because it's called 10cc, so it has to be called self-titled. I'm totally mangling my script by going off script and then going back to it. That's what's happening.
Script mangling.
In case everybody's wondering, what the fuck is he talking about? Well, I'm talking mangled script talk. So let's get back onto the script. During the last couple of weeks, I have had some emails that wanted me to do a couple of my prestigious and celebrated impressions.
Impressions.
So today I will do that. I will do three impressions. And this one I just came up with. No, Rob actually came up with this for me 2 days ago when he wanted the voice of Peter Lorre. And I said, do that.
I couldn't do Peter Lorre. I tried and I failed.
You failed badly.
I embarrassed myself.
Rob can do some good impressions. I can do some good impressions. But there are impressions between the both of us, which we can't do.
You know it or you don't.
So Peter Lorre is, I'm not quite prepared for this, but let me get into You had to do your, you had to do your like Humphrey Bogart Sam
Spade. He was
Spade
in all those
thing,
Humphrey Bogart movies.
Where you kind of go like, where's the diamonds or something like that? You
give me that. I know where the Maltese Falcon.
No, is. I do the Peter Lorre, you stupid fuck. Give me a like a Humphrey Bogart line so I can get into character.
I was just letting the audience know how bad my Peter Lorre is.
Well, it is bad. So
Peter Lorre, are that
give me a fucking line.
Say, just Mac, can you spare a dime for a fellow American who's down on his luck?
There's something about what you're saying that I don't quite understand. But what I do understand is that I don't have that Falcon. You think I have the Maltese Falcon, but I don't. And I never did.
Now you put that down.
Peter Lorre. Okay, now one of my most famous impressions is Paul Lind, that everybody
Paul Lind.
Loves
we love
me.
Paul Lind.
Well, everybody loves me. Now. So there's a question on Hollywood Squares, and it'll be like, yes, it'll be like a good question. I won't ask Rob. It's like the worst sidekick ever. So I'm not going to have him help me on this.
Nope.
So we're going to have like there's a question. I go, well, oh. I don't know. The guy's kind of takes his pants down, and then all of a sudden I see his willy. That wasn't good. It's hard to go from Peter Lorre to Paul Lind.
That's
it is.
You think you go from a Peter to a Paul pretty quickly?
Oh, please.
But you can only borrow from one to
pay the other. You're talking about having my pants down. And yet if I have my pants down, I'm going to put it in a guy's butt. That's Paul. Okay. And my favorite all time, and Rob does this also equally as well. This is my favorite impression. Casey Kasem, as always, on America's Top 40. And I've got this one planned because I've been doing this for weeks. You know, we're coming in there at number 17 is Chicago Transit Authority. And you know what is interesting, boys and girls, about Chicago Transit is that right now they're not called Chicago Transit Authority because the actual Chicago Transit Authority has decided that they can't use that name. So they're just going by the name of Chicago. And that's a name I love. And so when we hit number 5 this week with a Chicago song, we know where they're coming from. And Peter Cetera, I know that when you started, you had muscular dystrophy, and you've overcome it, and you have risen to the top of the charts. Top of the charts, not only physically, but in my heart. So here's Chicago with Do You Know What the Heck Time It Is? That's my Casey.
Casey, I wasn't buying it until you mentioned the chart position. I was like, is that Casey?
I was going like, is that Casey Casey? Oh, the chart position.
Number 5. Okay, that's Casey.
These are not my best because I have to admit, except for the Peter Lorre, which is pretty good. It's hard to do impressions in freezing cold.
Yeah,
and
we should be warmed up.
It is. It's very cold. We were supposed to have a heater for the show, but the excuse we got for why we don't have a heater is I was sleeping.
Yeah, I can read it to you.
Okay, we're going to read. We asked for the heater for the show, for the studio, and we're going to give you the reply.
Here's a reply from the land caretaker. Sorry, I was sleeping. Now, the I is small case, and there's no comma between the sorry and I, and no period at the end. So how seriously am I to take this?
And we have yet to hear anything other than, I got your message about the heater, basically, is what she's saying, but I was sleeping. What? We have more news on the heater.
No, nothing. Forget it.
Okay. Well, speaking of people sleeping on podcasts, Rob, how was your week?
My week was a kind of week.
May I say that your week, how different is it from 2 days ago when we asked you, because we only taped our last show 2 days ago. So how was your last 2 days?
Well, I was sad a couple of days ago, but today I'm happy. And the reason I'm happy is that after several years of abstinence from smoking cigarettes, I've finally decided to start up again, and I feel great.
Oh, you
great.
Have. This is actually news. This is actually something which not as stupid gibberish that you say.
Change, which is a
that pisses people off. It's actually, you're actually going back to smoking.
I'm going back to smoking.
Which I do not condone at all, but because of the horrible lifestyle that you live in, whatever makes you happy, man.
I've had so few things, so I'm taking a few of them back. And the cigarettes.
Rob has had so few happy, joyous moments in his life in the last couple of years that anything that he can grab onto, he is.
It's just been a void. I've been trying to get through it by sleeping. It's incredible.
Sleeping. Today we have, that was a good segment. See, because you actually, this is what I want you
a
to do,
happened.
Is actually talk about something or make something up that's
make
funny.
Something
not
up.
Just say,
yeah.
Well, it's Monday or it's Tuesday and say something stupid.
I got to make something up every time. Except this one.
So today we have a special segment. You're a big letdown. I hate to say it, but on the show, you are like 1/10 as sharp and funny as you are in real life. If you guys would realize, or and ladies,
yep.
How funny this guy is, and yet when he's on the show, it's like dead wood. It is like dead wood.
Well, on the show, everything I do is wrong.
Yes.
Whereas in real life, everything I do is ignored.
Yes. Okay, so today we have a special segment dedicated to one of the greatest things I ever learned in my life, including all my 6 years of school. No, well, that's not 6 years. Don't do that. No,
I
had to do the thing.
My neck there. I just thought
well,
was
no,
saying.
It distracts me. Well, it does. Like I don't know if you're what should see. Now I have to start over again. Okay, today. We have a special segment dedicated to one of the greatest things I ever heard in my life. It's a radio show called The History of Rock and Roll. And he's still doing it, ladies and gentlemen, but I'm just ignoring it. And to say this series changed my life is an understatement. Because the series of History of Rock and Roll came on in 1978, and
it was a good one.
Yes,
they had a lot of rock and roll, and they talked about it.
It came at a time when I was looking for the history of rock and roll. I was looking for answers to questions I didn't have, which was where did it start? Who started it? Where was the progression? I wanted all these answers, and I wanted them even before I was a teenager, because when I got into it, it was boom. It was, this is what I want to do. I'm 11 years old. I don't give a shit.
People do
this.
This
is what I want to do.
I can do it too.
I can do it too. I can write songs. All this came to me in like seconds. And it literally sounds like one of those bullshit stories. And they may not be bullshit. I shouldn't say that. But it sounds like one of those stories you hear on TV where somebody says, you know, oh, I saw...
I was watching the Ed Sullivan Show.
Yes. I saw a girl across the dance floor and I said, I'm going to marry her or whatever. And then we ended up getting married and have been married for 50 years. And, oh, this
stories.
Changed my life. I heard this and it changed my life, which I say many times because it has. But literally... When my friend came over and played me early one morning before we went to school, the White Album, just the first three songs or so before we had to go to school, I knew the first second that Dear Prudence came on from back in the USSR, everything changed. I knew that that's what I wanted to do. I knew that that's what I wanted to write songs like. I knew that that's everything. So the thing is, you're young, you don't know anything. And luckily at that time, there was a show that actually first aired in 1969 on the radio called The History of Rock and Roll. And it filled in, as with books did, because books, they had encyclopedia type things of rock and roll because they didn't have the internet, obviously. So I had that. Sorry, Rob, this was really distracting me. I had that, and I was reading a lot. But this History of Rock and Roll, now this was 50 hours. Maybe it's more. It's got to be more than that. Because that'd be 50. No, that'd be like 50 shows. Because it was an hour, a show, an hour a show every week.
50 minutes. 50 or 60 shows.
50, yeah. Well, I know they said 50 shows, 50 hours. And I'm going, how many shows? Oh, yeah, that's an hour. So that's like a whole year of the history of rock and roll. Now, what they would do, because it got updated in 1978, and then it got played everywhere on the AM stations and FM stations, mostly in the AM stations. And what they would do is that they would play a whole like weekend of it. So I guess you would hear all the shows for 48 hours, right? And so on. So you'd hear all the shows, but of course you couldn't listen to them all. So it was kind of like a primer, and then they would put the show on once a week for like a year. And I listened to every one, and it supplied me with all the information that I need as a basis point for my knowledge of rock and roll. It all happened within a year. That doesn't happen anymore. First of all, you're only talking about the first 25 years of rock and roll, and nowadays you're talking about, what, 60?
Yeah, 20, 30, 40, well, maybe
60, 70 years of rock and roll.
70 years since rock and roll started.
Right. So it's very difficult. You would have to have almost, it'd be totally different than mind consuming, because there's just so much that has happened. You having a heart attack?
No, my back is just killing me. I was driving a vehicle all day. I can barely.
I'm not criticizing. It's just that you're yes, really
it's very
throwing
distracting
me off. But I also sympathize.
Might make it through the show, might not.
That's okay. So anyways, I know, people. I know. It's not Rob's fault. It's not my fault. It's both our faults. I'm going to show you the... I'm going to go back on that. I know this is like one of our worst shows ever. I think we're setting a new low for this show. I'm going to tell you what the shows were about. And I think we're going to go into a two-part segment on this. So we'll do some next week. But it started off, this is amazing, because this is, if you play this 50 hours, 1 hour a week to people, for kids, 15, 16 years old, they would understand rock and roll from 1954 to like 1980. They would know that. And that's, to me, was the most important years. Important years were to come also, of course. But those were the beginnings and then the stabilization of rock and roll. And it should be taught in school. I've always considered that if... And it should... It's not even talked in... It's not even talked about on radio anymore, let alone being talked in school.
No, I feel like a long time since I've heard radio personalities talk about the music that is playing in between their talking.
Yes, I used to revel in that too. I used to revel in the stories that they would tell about the songs that were being played.
They were disc jockeys, but now they're radio personalities.
Now they're just radio personalities with, you know what happened last night when I was watching TV? Let me tell you.
What
first
did you do
of all,
on the weekend.
Let me tell you about my weekend. So the show started with, obviously, the first show was The Birth of Rock and Roll. And you had great songs like Earth Angel and the Bo Diddley, Bo Diddley, have you heard from Bo Diddley? And a whole bunch. See, what they did was that they would play as much of the hit singles of an artist as they could. As they could time-wise. So you wouldn't just get one Chuck Berry song. If they were doing the, like they did in this Birth of Rock and Roll episode, you got Maybelline and School Days and Rock and Roll Music and Johnny B. Goode. And then they went to Fats Domino and they played Ain't That a Shame and Blue Monday and Blueberry Hill. And it's just, oh, man.
That gives you a better overview of what they
It do. Gives you an over, it does. Instead of playing a song and saying, well, this is what we do, kind of, is that you know.
One song can also be less than indicative of what the artist
that's
does.
That's what I mean. That's why sometimes we do two or three albums from an artist, because we feel that one album isn't indicative of their career, even in the 70s. We have the next episode of Country Rock, which is funny because it actually should be Hillbilly at the time. It's funny to be called Country Rock. and talk about Bill Haley in the comments and Johnny Cash and Jerry Lee Lewis and Elvis Presley, because that's hillbilly. That's
nowadays in the 80s they started to call it rockabilly.
I'm sorry, that's actually the word I was looking for. Rockabilly.
Rockabilly.
That's actually what it is, and all just a fascinating episode. And like I said, they would take three songs from Bill Haley. They started off the show with Shake, Rattle, and Rollin', Crazy Man, Crazy, and Rock Around the Clock. They did four songs from Jerry Lee Lewis, three songs from the early career of Elvis Presley. Then they went into Elvis Presley Part Two. They were, what I'm saying is the history of rock and roll was very thorough in that they tried to get as many hits from the artists that they were profiling as they could. And to be honest with you, I think when they did an artist, they got in almost all their hits that were at least big. I mean, they wouldn't do a hit like
a minor hit.
A minor hit that got into the lower hundreds or whatever, but they would do the ones that made an impact on the and I'm just looking, they had three episodes on Elvis, and how important is that when you're growing up to hear that? You got 50s rhythm and blues. Oh, they did have rockabilly. I'm sorry. It's funny because their second show was called Country Rock, but it had, I don't know. It's not what we term country rock nowadays, but it was kind of like country artists doing rock and roll, like Johnny Cash and Jerry Lewis and Bill Haley. And I get what they're going at now. They had a great episode, as I'm looking here, on Rhythm and Blues with the Drifters. Whole bunch of songs by the Coasters and the Drifters. And, of course, Ray Charles. I mean, how much of an education? This is like the first five shows. How much of an education is that right there? Then they go into a show called 50s Rockabilly. And this is one really rocking show. So you got Gene Vincent with Bebop Alula. And you got the Crickets with That'll Be the Day. And Peggy Sue and Oh Boy. And you got Eddie Cochran with Summertime Blues. I love Eddie Cochran. This is my period.
20 Flight Rock,
brilliant song. This is my period. I've always said to Rob, if I had to choose one decade to listen to all the time, it would be the 50s.
Ignore me, I'm switching chairs.
Rob is switching chairs. Rob is having trouble with his back, so please be sympathetic. And anyways, I will go on to more episodes next week and talk about that and talk about how important it was. Because of the condition of Rob, I think we're going to go right to reviewing the album, because Rob is
not going to last.
If we delay the show, he may not last till the end.
I'm currently doing a standing up.
Okay. And everything's throwing me off. It's not Rob's fault. Rob, it's not your fault.
It is exactly my fault. Okay. It is the fault of mine.
So today we are going to review the self-titled debut album by English rock band 10cc that was released 50 years ago in 1973. Now, 10cc is very interesting in that they almost are more interesting before they got signed up, because they did so many things before they became 10cc as far as a band. Now, three of the founding members of 10cc were friends in the Manchester area. Now, you know the Manchester area very well in England, Rob. You grew up there.
Oh, yeah, it's in England.
As boys, Kevin Godley and Lal Cream. Godley was the drummer. He played other instruments, but Godley was the drummer. Lal Cream played piano and guitars and keyboards. And they knew each other. Grain Goldman and Godley attended the same. Grain Goldman was the bass player and also wrote a whole bunch of songs. They attended the same secondary school, and they were all Jews. It's true. I say it in a bad way, but I'm just kidding. You know, they were all Jewish boys, which in England,
was odd.
I know Peter Green was Jewish, but I don't really know. Mark Bolan from T-Rex was Jewish also. Not too many from England that were Jewish, but there were some, and I'm not knocking it. I'm just saying it.
It was odd.
It was it was odd.
It was odd, especially. I guess it wasn't odd because they all went to the same Jewish type of school, and then they met there and then formed a band. But you definitely wouldn't come out of school and say I'm starting a band, and all of a sudden the first three guys you get would be all Jewish. In England, that's a very rare thing, you know.
Yeah, going to school definitely. Yeah.
Yes. And then they started recording in not as 10cc, but in various bands. Like in 64, Gouldman had a band called The Whirlwinds, and they recorded Lal Cream composition. And you see that all around. They just recorded singles like throughout the 60s in various names and various things. And Godley and Cream got together as a duo and recorded solitary singles for the Marmalade label. I mean, it's a complicated and very fascinating look into actually 10cc for a whole 10 years before they became 10cc. They kind of played on each other's records, but they still weren't like a full band yet. Now, they did become a band. They got their own kind of studio. Eric Stewart, who was the guitar player of the band and also one of the singers, owned a part of Strawberry Studios in the Stockport area. You know the Stockport area of England.
It's near, right? Manchester.
Yeah, in Manchester. And and so they kind of had their own studio. So they would record their own demos for songs under different names for bands. And the most popular one, I'm going to get off this very soon because it could go on and on and on because they recorded so many songs. But they did an album what was the album, Rob?
It was the new Flying Purple Dragons.
Yeah, that was the second band they were in. The Hot Legs.
Okay, Legs.
Yeah. Not a great name for a band. But in early 1971, Kevin Godley, Lal Cream, and Eric Stewart recorded the album as the Hot Legs, called Thinks School Stinks, which actually had about a year or two before, 2 years before Alice Cooper, the same type of artwork.
School. Oh.
Yeah, very interesting. And that included a song that a lot of people know called Neanderthal Man, which became a very popular single in Europe and a good single in North America too. He's a Neanderthal man. She's a Neanderthal girl. Rob doesn't know. I know the song. Anyways, three of the four members of 10cc played on that as Hot Legs, but that didn't go anywhere. Then they would release a couple singles. Interestingly, they played as the backup band on two Neil Sedaka albums.
Yeah, it's unusual.
10cc played on the albums Solitaire and The Tra-La Days Are Over. So again, a very rich history in this band. It reminds me a lot of when we reviewed Lynyrd Skynyrd and how they had been a bar band for 6 years and had honed their skills. And when they went into the studio, were very experienced and knew what they were doing. 10cc, in a different way, had honed their skills, and by the time they became 10cc in 1973, were a much more experienced band than almost anybody else who was releasing a debut album. I guess that's what I'm getting at. It's funny because the band had Bob Dylan, who they backed and learned a lot of stuff, and 10cc had Neil Sedaka. I'm not knocking Neil Sedaka, but he ain't no Dylan. So now, and that gets us to our first album that they released in 1973, their debut album. And it depends on how you listen to 10cc. If you listen to 10cc like me and Rob have, you kind of think of them as a pop rock band with some great singles and, kind of just a pop rock band, but
yeah,
they didn't start a
pop rock band.
Yes. You knew that they were a little bit, even with their singles, you know, like Dreadlock Holiday, that they weren't exactly
multiple characters in songs, yes, and the voices would change to accommodate these characters. That was unusual.
But then you also had, and this is after Kevin Godley and Lal Cream left, they did have a straight, like they did have straightforward song, like The Things We Do for Love. And they had, and this should have been one of my top 30 songs of all time. I regret not putting it in.
I'm Not In Love.
But I'm Not In Love is about the most brilliant production and ideas that I've ever heard in a song. I'll tell you, I remember not the first time I heard I'm Not In Love, but I think my dad was driving me at night to pick up something, like, and it was dark, and it was, we were going to the, just to the mall, and he went inside. And so he would always leave me with the radio as he went inside and got his hardware stuff or whatever he was looking for. And I remember that song came on the radio, the long version. And it's one of those moments where you go, is music like that? Can you do music like that? Because the, I just felt everything about that song to me was emotional. Like the choir of overdubs of vocals was unbelievably moving to me for some reason. Just that alone. It just sounded moving. All these voices that were all in sync, but there seemed to be like 100 of them. And it just created, to me, it created an atmosphere. And then there was a second atmosphere, which is just the keyboard coming in with the vocals, which made it sound so lonely. Plus you have this eerie kind of vocals on top of it. And it just sounded otherworldly to me, like I had never, and I did, I still to this day don't think I've ever heard anything like it. And then in the middle of the song, because it never really breaks into like, oh, we're going to play drums, and it was not that. It was not that. It was a moody,
kind of time,
moody song. And then in the middle, you got a girl singing, big boys don't cry. And just the way she said it, you knew that you were hearing something that just wasn't being done. And it is one, it's even though I forgot about it for my top 30 songs of all time, it is not only one of my top 30 songs, it really influenced me into what you could do in the studio, how you could take a simple song, because I've heard versions of I'm Not In Love, and they don't really do too much for me when you just play it on guitar. But it's amazing that you can take sometimes a good song and make it into something unbelievable or even transcendent by the production, by the right choices that you make. Yeah. And that was my really first experience of 10cc, and it was a great experience, but it's not indicative of 10cc. 10cc, as we hear on this first album, and I think throughout their career, we're not, Rob and I are more familiar, being from North America, we're more familiar with the singles, because 10cc was not an album band in North America. They were very much in Europe. They were in England. They bought the albums.
I got the greatest hits because it had three songs I'd heard on the radio on it, and I played that quite a bit because.
I've never disliked a song that I've heard on the radio. I've always liked everything that 10cc has put on the radio, but that's all my knowledge. So I've always said, oh, I like 10cc, but it was a very limited knowledge. It's like 9 or 8 songs or whatever. But I always held them in high esteem. And when I first kind of, I've never listened to their albums, to be perfectly honest with you, but I have listened to parts of albums. And I was, and especially when they have a Spotify list, they'll have a 10cc song on there, and I'll listen to it and I'll go, wow, that doesn't sound like 10cc to me. It's very, very artsy, very jokey, very out there. And it's like, that's not the 10cc I know. So the 10cc that is kind of a singles band is different than the 10cc that was an album band. A lot more amusing, very much art pop.
Definitely a art sense rock. Of humor.
Definitely humor. Definitely. Especially when Lal Cream and Kevin Godley were in the band. When they left and Eric Stewart and Graham Gouldman took over the band, which was from the album Deceptive Bends On and Things We Do for Love, they became much more of a... they took a lot of the acerbic stuff out and became more concentrated on creating... But then again, that band, 1 year later, came out with Bloody Tourists with Dreadlock Holiday, which is one of their best songs and funniest songs too. So they still kept that, but it wasn't as front and center as it was for almost every song. And
wasn't as prominent, yeah.
Yes. So that brings us to this album, which I knew was not going to... I knew it was not going to be like the 10cc that's on the radio, because I have read enough about 10cc to know that they were a different band. And there's a certain energy to this. There's a definitely certain energy. It's a very entertaining record. And one of the things, before I get into it, the closest that I can come by describing 10cc is that they're very similar to the band. They're kind of like the English version of the band, in that everybody can play different instruments. They do have their central instrument, but everybody can switch instruments. They all can write.
Yeah, yeah.
They all can sing. They all can sing excellent. And they all had a big... And the strange similarity with the band, not too much musically, but what I'm talking about is the structure and everything, is that they started like the band did, where they started like woodshedding kind of thing for like 6 years, and then backing Neil Sedaka, where the band backed Bob Dylan, and then the band, under different names, released a couple of singles, and so did 10cc. They did their experimenting in the studio a lot before they came out. So they were both of these bands, which were very talented musically and in songwriting, knew what they were doing by the time they went into the studio to make their first records. So there's a very big similarity between the two bands. Musically, that kind of ends because they're not very similar at all musically, but it's strange how personality-wise and how their careers projected are very similar. So getting to the album, it's a very entertaining album. I was very entertained by it. But there were things I didn't like about it also. I think it may have to do with being North American and not understanding a little bit of the English satirical side. I don't know.
Sure.
I mean, I don't know. It's just like, first of all, I'm going to be very critical of one song here. They do kind of like takeoffs or homages to different. And the first song, Johnny Don't Do It, is one of those songs where either they're making fun or they're paying homage to those tragic songs of the early 60s and late 50s. Yeah. With The Last Kiss and songs like that. And... or tell Laura I love her. But first of all, and it's very much Johnny sounds like Frank Angel. Zappa. Frank Zappa does doo-wop songs, but Frank Zappa has, I noticed this right away, because they do two songs that are very 50s on this album.
Yeah.
But one thing that Frank Zappa is that he does those songs because he loves doo-wop. And even though it means, and he has a great sense of humor also. And so even though Frank may be doing a send-up of 50s doo-wop, he also has an extreme love for it. And so there's always kind of like a good song behind what they're doing. I found that there was more of a message on Johnny Don't Do It than an actual song. There was no song on there that was good. I just found it kind of like a really dreary, boring song. And if I seem like I'm going on about it, it's because to me, no matter how entertaining this album is, I find it to be a little bit too smart pants for my liking. I find it to be, and this is only at points, because I find that there's a lot of ingenuity on this record. But, and I'm not the first person to say this. In fact, I read this on the All Music Review, is that you can find this band a little bit too cute and a little bit too... smarty, just smarty pants, just intellectual. And I found that with Johnny Don't Do It. If you're going to do a send up, at least write a good song around it. And I didn't find that with this. Donna, the other kind of 50s song, was definitely better. They had actually written a really good song and did kind of a 50s send-up of it, which I really liked. There are songs on here that there are parts of them that I really like because they're so different, because they don't just go verse, chorus, and then and then solo and then back to chorus and then fade out.
I don't know how they write and assemble the parts that they've done.
Oh, it's incredibly changes. Complicated, isn't it?
Yeah, it's that's the part I was saying about how different characters have different voices, but they also have different backing music for those voices.
Yes. That's a very good point. That's an excellent point. And not only do they have different people, just like the band, sing different parts in the song, but the music will change as that person sings. And sometimes it works really good, and sometimes it
does less so.
Just less so. I wouldn't say it falls on its face, just less so. And...
yeah, sometimes it falls into that a bit sharp. Yeah,
it falls into that point of sometimes being a little bit too smart for your britches, and having too many ideas, and kind of forgetting about the song. And sometimes, like, there's a song like "The Dean and I," which I really like, and then there's a couple parts in it. So it's almost like I almost can't say that there's one song. There is one song, "Rubber Bullets," which I just thought was really great from the beginning to the end. Just a fantastic song. And it did go to number one in the UK. I really love that song. It also has one of the... Without a doubt, I've listened to hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of albums. I've never heard a song that typified filler like I have with the first song on side two, "Speed Kills." It's almost like it's not even good enough to be an outtake.
Lyrically, it definitely there wasn't too much there. As a rocker, there the one thing that caught me about that song that really fascinated me was the drumming. I don't normally listen to drumming, but this was kind of a rocker with it had a 16th note tom feel, and I'm thinking something's different about that. I'm hearing a tambourine. I think I'm hearing a hi hat. There's no cymbals played all through that song.
I don't think there is. Unfortunately for me, the whole of the song was, in all honesty, total rubbish to me. It was just nothing about that song did anything except just scream to me that this is just put on because we need another 4 minutes on the record. It just was absolutely nonsensical to me. No matter how brilliant they are at times in their playing and their arrangements, this was the one where they had their smarts again outdid them, and they thought that they could put a slight song on here and make it clever enough that nobody would notice. Well, I noticed. You got to have a song there. I'm sorry. I thought the album ended very, very well. I really liked "Hospital Song" I like, but I really like "Ships Don't Disappear in a Night," do they? I thought that was very clever and also catchy. "Fresh Air from My Mama." See, none of these songs, this is really hard to describe this
Fresh
album.
"Fresh Air from My Mama," when that one came on, you know, the first time I was lying on the couch, it came on. I thought the album had ended and like a Paul McCartney song was playing that I hadn't heard.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I thought that was Paul McCartney about the first two lines. And then as he kept singing, I was like, well, no, that's not Paul.
It's a very... It may be the only song on this album that sounds extremely serious and artistic in a sort of Paul McCartney way. This album is really hard to describe. It really is. We have done, I think this is our 191st first album. Yeah. This is one of the hardest albums I've ever had to describe. Because you have to hear it to actually, and I haven't said this about too many records we've done, where I've said you have to hear it to understand it.
I came up with the description the first listen, and it hasn't changed. I described this, to anyone who wants to know what it sounds like, as 1950s rock and roll meets Rocky Horror Picture Show.
That's a very apt description. That is.
I do find the singing is very, it's theatrical. It's actually probably better theater music than a lot of theater music.
Yes. I would agree with that. And yet, I still don't think it covers everything. As great as that description is, which it is.
That covers maybe 30 to 40% of the...
Yeah, exactly. And then I could say something, it'd cover another 30 or 40. But it really is not what we have to hear. And I'm telling you, you're either going to really like this record or you're going to think it's a total waste of your fucking time.
Some of the mood and tempo changes, they work really... I mean... They're not rough, but they're really contrary, really a great difference between the one part to another.
You know what the thing is, Rob, is I think it depends on what you want from these songs when you listen to it. Do you want them, do you like it when it goes into different areas and then comes back? Or do you want it to be more straightforward? And I think that... It is how when people listen to it, whether they like it or not, does these songs are they too arty for you, and you want them a little bit more basic, or do you like that quirkiness to each song?
Yeah, see, I like the quirkiness.
I like the quirkiness, except it's hard for it to succeed on a total album basis because it's hard for it to succeed on a song basis because, like I said, I could take almost every one of these songs, except maybe Rubber Bullets and a song or two, and say, oh, I didn't like that little part in there. Or I didn't like that. That was a little bit too smart in there.
But they have a lot of changes in each song. Yes. So there's a lot to either like or not like.
That's right. That's why I say I can take a song like The Dean and I, which I really liked, and say, oh, that's really cool. But still, it's not great, like fantastic great, because there was a couple things in there. Because they do that was not totally kosher with me, you know. So
I wonder how did they write these songs? Like you know, there's multiple writers. Did like one guy say, okay, I'll write this verse, you write that chorus? I don't know.
Yeah, again, we have this collaboration type of thing, just like with the singing and the instruments being played. Everybody playing kind of different instruments. You have that in the writing with you mostly have Lal Cream and Kevin Godley writing together, as they would until they left the band together as a duo. And you kind of have Eric Stewart and Graham Goldman, who would eventually encompass the band later on and be the two songwriters together. You do have those two camps, but at this point, they're switching people back and forth, which is neat. And yeah, you do wonder, like, who thought of this song? Who added this? There was the thing about Graham Gouldman had said that I found was on the song Rubber Bullets. It's right here. I'm looking at it right here. He came up with the great line. They were missing something in Rubber Bullets. Lal Cream and Kevin Godley, who wrote it. They were missing something. And then he came up with a great rhyme of ball and chains and balls and brains. And that kind of finished the song in a kind of like a good way. It kind of like, oh, we had been working on this for so long and we couldn't find a satisfactory way of being completely done. And I think that's the way it was handled. I think a couple of guys would come up with a song and maybe somebody else would say, I can finish this. And that's why it's so, because they would finish this with another part. So if you're confused by what we've been saying about what this album is like, we don't blame you, because it's an odd record.
It's a hodgepodge.
It's a hodgepodge.
Not of like from song to song, but from part in song to part in song.
Yes. There's, like I said, the only song that I found, Rubber Bullets does, I guess, in a way, go from beginning to end and is straightforward. The only song that I found actually was Fresh Air for My Mama, which you think is a really serious song, and then you kind of listen to the lyrics, and they're, again, very satiric. But it is a very Paul McCartney-like song, and it is, you could see what the band could do if they just weren't quirky and so smart. You know, when some, like I said, a lot of times they're too smart for their own good, but if they just smart concentrated... Sometimes I get that. Sometimes I get it. You guys just being smart asses and showing what you can do. And that can come off, as it did for some people, not the right way. But you could see that when they just have a song and they just do it straight, Like Fresh Air for My Mom, I think it's just it's just an amazing song. But that's
Frank Zappa just did a song with it. They can do that once in a while, but that's not their style.
Yeah, I agree. It would become kind of their style later on that a lot of people would know about. It's kind of what I talked about last week when I said, well, this album that we're going to be doing next week is not what you know of this band, if you're North, especially if you're North American, because you just think of this band as playing straightforward rock, pop rock songs. Their first four albums are not like that. Their first four albums are like this. And you either like it or you don't like it. I can't see a middle ground in this because the songs, every song except for one or two changes. And you may like the change in the middle and then it goes back to the core of the song. Or you may say, that's a little bit too smartsy for me. Why did it have to change?
I didn't like that change.
I didn't like that change. It's a quirky record. But my final analysis is... I thought it was very entertaining. Every time I listened to it, I was entertained from the first song to the 10th.
Yes.
And I thought it was very good.
Something to keep me interested.
I wish it was better because I feel that there was a better record in here than what I heard, but I still heard a very good record.
I think they had to do this to do this. This was what they were going to do, what they were destined to start out doing.
What I would want it to be...
If you could sniff
doesn't
those,
matter.
Sniff those parts that you don't
yes,
like.
Yes, sniff the parts that are natural to you because I don't like it. No, that's what Rob is saying is correct. You do what you do because that is how you do it. And that's all, you, at this point, what you know about. Sometimes you change and you want to, as they did, and you want to get a little bit more straightforward, which they did by 1976 and 1977. They did do that. But at this point, it's like, we want to put all this stuff in there. And if it doesn't work for you, that's too bad. But that's what we want to do. Yeah. That's called arts. That's
this
called artistry.
The experiment they wanted to try.
That's right. And, so I'm not going to knock that. I'm not going to be just as sometimes pretentious as they are and say, they should have done this and they should have done that because that's unnatural to them. I'll take it on the basis of what I hear and very entertaining record. Very good record. I give it 3.5 stars. Very entertaining. But very few things work all the way through. Almost only one or two songs actually, to me, were perfect from the beginning to the end.
Kind of like that it is. There's so many changes, and I can't think of one that all the way through... Yeah, there were parts about each song that I liked. And I don't think there were too many parts I didn't like. There were a few that I thought, well, that's an odd or jarring
change. You see, I think that's my point. I don't think I said it very well. It's not that I didn't like what they changed. Because there was nothing that they moved into and I went, oh my God, that's terrible. But it was, like you said, it was jarring. And maybe it was... not what I wanted. I didn't want it to change.
It was frequent enough. Like there was a lot of...
Like I would have liked to have...
This is art rock.
It's like I would have liked to have it a certain song stay maybe. And then it went and like you said, it made a jarring turn. And it didn't make a bad jarring turn, but I didn't think that it needed it.
Some of the turns exactly. I was questioning why that was there. No.
So I like that you kind of corrected me because I was kind of saying for the first 15 minutes here that they made changes that I didn't like. That's not true. None of the changes they made were inadequate or sounded wrong. They just sometimes you feel weren't needed and it was a little bit too smartsy. But that's how they wrote it. You either like it or you don't. It's so funny how we're really... 100% almost simpatico on almost nothing works completely on this album because there's too many quirks and changes to it. But I think we both agree it's a highly entertaining album.
It's highly entertaining. I really like the playing. I love the choice of sounds they use. It's really thick music. Adding those synthesizers, which early 70s... synthesizers, they weren't the greatest, but the way these guys are using them,
It never sounds thin.
Yeah, it almost has a growl to it.
Yeah.
I don't know who's doing the guitar solos, but the distorted guitar, it sounded like a horn. It was being played like right. a horn.
I think Eric Stewart did more. It's hard to know because they don't tell you, yeah. and they all play different instruments, yeah. but I'm pretty sure that...
Whoever was doing that, I definitely know was one
That's
person.
Eric Stewart, and Lal Cream did most of the keyboards, and of course, Graham Gouldman played the bass, and this is just the basic lineup, yeah. And Godley. Kevin Godley played the drums. And they're all, again, I related to the band in that they all play their own instruments extremely well, but then it can also switch instruments extremely well. They are incredibly gifted in both songs, because these are, like I said at the beginning, difficult songs. Try and copy one of them, like try and play, what's the word? Cover one of these songs. You're spending a lot yeah. of time trying to cover one of these songs.
And let's just cover the vocals. See how long that takes.
Oh yeah, just the vocals alone
to match the sounds that they're getting.
I would almost consider it impossible until they started to go into that area of more commerciality, like Dreadlock Holiday. I would find that wow, I wouldn't even touch these songs. And not because of badness, but because I could not do it. I actually couldn't do it. They have their own sound. And you either like it or you don't like it, but they have their own sound. And I don't know if I've ever heard a record like this before. I don't think I have. Like I said, I've heard hundreds of records. And I don't think I've come across anything like this, good or bad. I think... 10cc's career, especially in the early days, is that's when people mostly like their albums. But even then, it was spotty. You know what I mean? And then when they became more commercial, it wasn't as popular because the albums were too commercial.
Oh yeah,
it went too much of a straight.
They weren't as quirky as this.
They weren't as quirky enough. Yeah. Exactly.
They'd lost their quirk.
Exactly. So. People kind of think this is the golden period, these first four albums when Lal Cream and Kevin Godley were there, and they were really quirky, because even though they're still not classic albums, they're very good to excellent albums, because there's so much ingenuity involved. Again, it's still hard to talk about because you have to hear it. But I think we have described it very well in that there are changes in the song. It sounds like it's going to go one way, and then they put something else in there, and very Frank Zappa-like in that way,
yeah.
and very satirical lyrically. We took an album that's very hard to describe, and described it as well as we could.
And that's all we can do there. Really.
And that's all we can do. And what's your rating on this? What did you think about this after it was all done?
I really like this one. This one, I was thinking, I'm going to give it a 4. It's between a 4 and a 4.5.
Wow. You shock me every time.
No, I really like this one. 10cc, like I said, I had the greatest hits, and that was on cassette. So I haven't heard that in 25 years, 20 years. And the Dean and I came on. And I knew every change. I knew where it was going.
Because so, would you say it helps? It helps if you've listened to this album more. If a person, just a regular person, listened to this album more than say the 3 or 4 times that I listened to it this week.
It possibly, yeah. Because, yeah. like I say, that.
I like. I have to admit what song. You just said, though. I agree with, like, the more I heard, like, the Dean and I, and I got used to the quirky changes, the more I really liked it. Because yeah. I think that when they succeed in their changes and you go, oh, that actually makes sense, that change, I get it, then it works really well. But when it doesn't and you kind of go, that's not a bad change, but I don't think it was needed.
Yeah, some of them, they change in directions that... Not only do you not expect, but you don't approve of.
Yes, but the Dean and I did. And that's why yeah. I liked it so much.
My point with that one is I had not thought of that song in years. Like, not since 25 years. And the fact that it came on and I knew how it went, it impressed itself on me all those years ago.
That's good. That's hard to forget. That's a very good point. What you're saying is that you've heard these songs on these great on this greatest hits album years, and
but
even as quirky as it is, you can't get it out of your head.
Yeah, I mean, the Rubber Bullets was the only one going into this album that I remembered.
Yeah, I love that song.
When I heard Dawn, I was like, oh yeah, that's one I was on. And the Dean and I, when you don't forget, drum days,
drum days. And I had to admit, I found it so funny.
I
because
shouldn't like that, but I love it.
It's like the song is like, lyrically, is like the sitcom How I Met Your Mother, where the guy sits down and tells you how he met their mother. And then it takes these weird turn into...
That sounds like a bunch of guys trying to build the pyramids and guys whipping them.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, it sounds like after he met the mother and they had their kids, it turns like they had humdrum days. And then all of a sudden they discovered money and you're going, what the fuck?
They're rolling in dollars.
And they're rolling, they're happy again.
From there? It's over.
Yes, exactly. That's the point. It sounds like it's going to say more and you want it to say more because it goes in another direction where
that's
it says,
that was the point of the song.
We met and we fell in love in school and she was the dean's daughter. And it was rough, but I loved her so much. But then we had kids, and it was humdrum, and it got stale. But then all of a sudden, we found a lot of money. And then it just kind of ends. And then it just said, no, what happens?
What the hell? That's a pretty brief, abrupt ending.
That's about what the album is like. It's hard to describe because it's quirky as hell, but it sure as hell is entertaining. And you cannot knock that. You know what? This is what they do at this point in their career. And I agree. I said it's 3.5. It's a very good record. I like this record. I just think that some of the quirkiness didn't rub off on me.
Yeah,
so a little bit smarter.
It also might even detract from what the songs could have
been. Yes, that's my point. But that's what they do. And you were more in favor of that, which I like. You like that.
I like the way the playing is definitely there. The music is definitely there. The lyrics I certainly liked. Sand in My Face kind of surprised me because... Yeah, I kind of pinned it as one way. And then at the end of the song, when the guy becomes like the guy that was kicking sand in his face.
It reminds me of a Monty Python sketch, Flying Circus.
That's definitely a sense of humor there and smartly written.
Yes, see, that's I find that there a lot of their attempts at being satirical, it's not funny. Like I find Frank Zappa extremely funny.
Yes.
But they're not going for that same, they're not going for the raunchy type of humor.
No, they're going for like
an English, more of an English
written song, yes. But it's got, definitely has humor sprinkled into it.
Yes. Yeah. It's more subtle and it's more, like I say, it's more English that sometimes I don't think I get. So it's not laugh down hilarious. Like I remember listening to Dreadlock Holiday and I was thinking, the first time I heard that, I was just laughing. I just thought that's and that was with Lal Cream and Kevin Godley not in the band, who were the satirical, mainly the satirical writers. I mean, they carried that. It seems like Eric Stewart and Graham Gouldman carried that in because that's what their fans liked, right? So we can't just totally abandon that. And they did a real good job on the Bloody Tourists album with that song, Dreadlock Holiday. But that's really in your face. A lot of this, you have to listen to the lyrics to catch the humor and the satirical element of it. The only one I really didn't like, as I said right at the beginning, was I thought a total bomb was Johnny Don't Do It, because I just didn't think... that, first of all, it was a very good tune. It wasn't funny and it wasn't satirical to me. It wasn't anything except a bad song.
It was like it was attempting something, but it didn't know what it was attempting.
Exactly. Whereas Donna was attempting almost the same thing and it succeeded almost 100% for me.
I like the lines that when you make me break up, you make me break down. Well, the way they say it. I didn't do that one.
Yes. But, you know, no. It was the way they said it. And it
catches you, the ear. It's like, wait a second.
Yeah. I really like that part. I think that's why Sidonia had something to it that Johnny Don't Do It didn't have. And that happens. We're talking way too long here. I thought we were going to end at 50 minutes, but it's a very involving record. But when you do a lot of smart experimenting as this album's. Sometimes you throw everything at the wall, but not everything sticks.
Yeah.
And that's okay, because at least you're being inventive, right? You're not being boring. And I'm not saying that 10cc was boring later. I can't actually even talk about that because I haven't heard their albums. We've just heard their singles. That's the North American view of 10cc. But I kind of tend to weigh what I've read is that they came a very top 40 type of band and boring. I'd rather have an exciting record like this that has missteps on it because it tries to be clever than I would, let's just play it safe.
Yeah, because this one at no time failed to be interesting. But okay, Headline Hunters and Speed Kills, those two kind of...
Again, only two songs just failed completely for me. And maybe that's why...
They glided by. They didn't fail. They just glided by.
You know what? It's funny that you say that. Because you know why? Because my total really feel of that I thought it was an entertaining album from beginning to end. It was like a real, like an album beginning to end. But then when I think of those two songs, just like you said, it glided by. Like the album just kind of glides as 1 to 10, almost like one song. But then when I hear those two songs, I think that's why I go from what you said is a 4.5 to 3.5 to me, is because those songs are so bad to me. And they're the only songs that are really bad to me that I would feel exactly the same as you do about this record. But I am so put off by those two songs, like really am put off, like really put off. I think they're terrible. And I think they're really below the quality of this band that it actually sinks what I would give this 4.5.
Yeah, yeah.
But 3.5 because those two duds are on there. That's too bad.
Yeah. I don't have feel as harshly towards them. I thought musically they had a bit of merit. Lyrically, not so. Lyrically, whatever they were going for with those ones was missed on me, whereas I got all the rest.
Oh, definitely Speed Kills, because you don't even know what the fuck they're talking about.
Yeah, there was the, mm-hmm. I think, one chorus there that I kind of liked the words on, but it was only three words.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I forget what it was.
It's forgettable, but it's forgettable in a way because I don't even know if they knew what they were talking about. They may have just been goofing off in the studio, who knows. But that's what it sounds like. And that's that may be okay because they maybe have needed 3 minutes, but then you're 3 minutes to fill the album, but then you're going to get criticism. I'm sorry, if you're going to put it on an album, sometimes you're going to get criticism for it. And even though you know that it's bad.
And if you like those songs, you're wrong.
I don't know. It's one of the few times, especially with Speed Kills, not so much. If you like doo-wop and 50s music, you can still like Johnny Don't Do It. But I just can't imagine in my head anybody liking Speed Kills. I just can't. I would like to be sympathetic, but I really think that's one of the worst songs I've ever heard fill up an album. That's how badly I feel about that song.
See, that's odd, because it doesn't grate on my ears like that. It just...
That's where we separate on this album. It's just that. It's just those two songs.
There's not a lot to attract me there, but... It's just a song.
Yeah, I think that's the only thing that separates us on this album is those two songs. Other than that, we agree. But again, to end this, I'm going to say I don't know whether to recommend this to anybody, because I don't know. I hate to recommend this and have them hate it, because you have to, no matter how, we could talk about this for another hour, and you'd still have to listen to it to understand it. And of course we're not. We're only going to talk about it for another 2 minutes. But I don't know. I can't recommend this album to people who like this or that.
No, I can't think of a person I'd recommend them to, because I don't know if anyone with taste is eclectic.
I can't either.
I personally like this a lot.
I do too. I think it's a very good album. I'm excited to hear other 10cc albums in their early days, because this is... fascinating stuff. It's energetic too, and it's just, I love a band that's energetic and just throws things at the wall.
It's as experimental as you can be.
And to kind of dismiss the rumors, and especially North America, about 10cc, you know, being like just a pop rock band, which they're not. They're much more than that.
This is at a time where everyone was trying to find a new musical style. And this, last week I mentioned before there was New Wave, there was New Wave. And this strikes me as a precursor to New Wave.
That's what you said, before there was New Wave, and then you paused and I said, there was New Wave.
Yes. And I agree with you. Therefore, I claim that statement as my own.
Actually, entirely it seems mine. Like last week, but it was 2 days ago. Before we freeze to death and Rob dies... Because Rob has really struggled through the show.
I'm getting a different chair.
And we both apologize, because I think up until the review, this may be our worst show we've ever done, because we're kind of out of sync a little bit. But we got
burning the candle at both ends.
Yeah, I apologize. We kind of dropped the ball a little bit on this show, and a little bit is my fault. I should have done a little bit more. Background on the segment research we did on the issue of rock and roll. And I'm a little bit disappointed. And but you know what? As always, we came together perfectly in sync to do a really good review. But to all the people who felt that we were just fucking around for the first half an hour, we do apologize.
We were fucking around.
We weren't fucking around, but it sounded like it, because things were happening. You don't know. Rob was really in a lot of pain, and I tried to cover it up, and he still is.
Moving my neck, making these crinkly noises, because if I hold still.
And it was distracting me, but it's really just our fault for it happens. So, you know, not every show runs the same. Things happen like work, and makes you feel weird and
it's not the kind where you cancel out. It's just the kind where you hope it'll be all right.
Right.
Oh.
And hey, you're allowed to have some shows that aren't exactly 10 out of 10.
We're only human.
This is only our second show that's not a 10 out of a 10. So stop blaming us. But that's our show for today. Now, next week, we will have the last installment of this series, and we've really compiled a lot of shows. This is what we do, because every time it seems like we can take a break, something happens, and we take too long a break because we get sick or something happens in the studio, and then we come back, and we have to do a whole bunch of shows, and we get burnt out. It's never, like, smooth. Hopefully now it'll be smooth, because we do the show next week, and then we're scheduled to take a week break. And then maybe things will fall into line and we won't have to take 3 weeks off and then do three shows in 4 days or whatever the hell we do, because it's just crazy how...
We need a producer and she's got to be hot.
Yes.
That would motivate us.
I think that's the most... Jeez, that's highly sexist. I would like to agree with it, because in my heart I do.
Exactly sexist.
Yes, it is. And gladly so. So we will have the last installment of this series on debut albums released 50 years ago from this year, 2023. So it'll be 1970, of course, next week. Again, it's a must-listen episode, because it's a really...
It don't get more important than this, and I don't even know what it is.
Rob doesn't even know what it is, but I'm really proud of all the albums that we've already done and the one album that we're about to do. It shows how eclectic 1973 is, and the 70s were in general.
But the next show, kapow!
And next show, I'm really excited. And also next week, Rob will also talk about his time in the Army, dressed as a woman, just like Klinger.
Oh, yeah. I was trying to get out just like Klinger.
Yeah.
But
remember you used to say, Section 8!
I was trying, but I wasn't trying as hard.
And again, we apologize. Not our top-graded show, but we did... You know what? We could have not done this show today.
Yeah, we could have just said, the hell with you guys.
That's not an excuse, but we could have. And
I'm not going to dwell on it. I thought it was just okay.
Yeah. We never do a bad show. We just do some shows that are okay.
That's okay.
And so until next week, everybody, take care and stay safe.
We can't start the show yet until maybe a heater comes.
That sounds like a Broadway show. We can't start the show until maybe a heater comes.